the Boss Man Show, special guest from Forbes, Brian Tepork, with me to talk about our Atlanta Hawks here. He's out of Baltimore, Maryland. What's up, Brian? How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Brian, you wrote an article about the Hawks should maybe do a consolidation trade, but today they made a trade. Cam Reddish, one of those guys who you would throw in a deal for a Ben Simmons or a bigger name, going to the Knicks in what I would call a cap move for legislative purposes to trade him, Solomon Hill, away to the Knicks for Kevin Knox and a first-round pick that can be used to sweeten the deal down the road to get an impact player in Atlanta going forward as the Hawks are now 17-23, struggling on defensively, having issues behind the scenes as well, man. So what are your thoughts being out of the purview of being here in Atlanta, but you're not here, but what's your idea for what you're hearing and seeing from your perspective outside of the Atlanta metro area?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Cam Reddish had been popping up in trade rumors a lot over the last month, so I'm not surprised that he's gone. I want to reserve judgment about this trade until I see the bigger picture, like once February 11th comes around and the trade deadline is over. You know, if they use that pick as part of a sweetener for a bigger deal, I think my impression of the trade would be different. But if we're like just doing, you know, snap grades right now, grade the trade, I feel like the Knicks got the better end of it just because that pick is so heavily protected. It's top 18 this year, I think top 16 next year, and then lottery protected in 24 and 25, I believe. So it's never going to be more than, you know, the number 15 pick. The Hawks also had to send the second rounder out. They're only getting Kevin Knox, who's a restricted free agent, back. So, you know, to me, it tells me two things. One, they're trying to thin out their rotation a little bit. Like, I don't think Kevin Knox is going to play very much, if at all. I think they're just not, they weren't really interested in re-signing Cam Reddish, who's up for an extension this offseason. If they didn't reach a deal with him, he would have been a restricted free agent in 2023. You know, as you alluded to, they've just have a lot of money on their books now. They have Trae Young on the max deal. They re-signed John Collins, re-signed Kevin Herter, have Clint Capella on a long-term deal as well.
Bogdanovich as well.
Yeah.
$18 million a year.
Yeah, and like by the time the Reddish and DeAndre Hunter, who's also up for an extension this summer, by the time those deals kick in, Gallinari would be off the books, and Bogdanovich, I think it's an $18 million player option for that last season, so he could be off as well. So it's not like they would have seven guys earning $15-plus million at the same time, but it's still – at some point, they're just going to be a very pricey team if they re-signed everyone. And I know the Hawks owner has been saying, like, we're not going to be able to afford everyone. At a certain point, we're going to have to pick and choose. I think given how the first half of the season has gone for the Hawks, it makes sense to start reshuffling some pieces around Trae Young. And I'm just curious to see where they go from here because, you know, now they have this pick that they could dangle with some of their other pieces to shake up more of their roster.
And O'Connell has to be paid eventually to play Capella. So I see Capella as maybe a two-year guy in Atlanta going forward and use him in an inspiring deal to pay O'Connell, dangle that money to get him off the books.
Yeah.
Like Bogdanovich, I see him maybe next year being, if he opts in, be a trade piece. But I'm going to look at the summer, maybe say, hey, look at him – say he's inspiring that way. Hey, $18 million, not so much money out there for agency this offseason here. I may look at that number, but Donovan used him to maybe do a 2-for-1 to find two quality pieces around Trae Young with that $18 million contract. Also, Gallinari's number, I will use that at the deadline because this offseason is only guaranteed for $5 million. So I will use that 21 now. Get the most value for it to maybe flip some around here with numbers to soften the blow, because you said Herter kicks in, Trae Young kicks in, Collins already kicked in, and what are the Hawks play-in team at best? And Tony Russell, I don't want to pay for that much money for a play-in team being attacked for that.
right, yeah. As you mentioned, I wrote a piece of Forbes earlier this week just about how I thought the Hawks were primed for a consolidation trade, and Gallinari is the one guy I think it makes the most sense to move this season. You just brought it up. You know, he's got $20.5 million this year, $21.5 next year, but only $5 million is guaranteed. So if they send him out this year, that $20.5 counts as outgoing salary. So they could use him, you know, as the salary filler for a star, whoever it may be, Ben Simmons, Jaylen Brown, whatever. Next year, if they wait until the offseason, the NBA changed the rules of how like guaranteed contracts count, only partially guaranteed contracts count. So only $5 million of that will count as outgoing salary next offseason. So a team could like look at him right now as, okay, we're getting him in. We're paying him $20.5 million this year. You know, we'll have him on the team. He'll contribute. And then next year we have a choice. We can either keep him at 21.5 or we can waive him, pay him $5 million and we'll get $16.5 million of cap space. If they acquired him in the summer, you don't get any cap savings because you either just waive, you know, you acquire him for the $5 million and then waive him and that's it. Or you keep him around at the 21.5. So he's definitely, I think, you know, the next shoe to drop if we're talking about what might be coming down in the next couple days, coming couple weeks before the trade deadline. I think Gallo is probably the most likely name to be moved.
And Lou Williams is out of rotation now. Lou Williams now banned to the bench like Kemba Walker was for a while. So they make him inactive every night now. So that's $5 million you can use too with Lou Williams' contract.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about the Hawks, like, I know the start of this season has been very frustrating, especially coming off of what they did last year, but they still have a lot of flexibility. So as hopeless as it might feel, I think their front office has earned the benefit of the doubt over the past couple of years that, you know, how they've assembled this team and kind of the run that they went on. And frankly, their talent evaluation has been really impressive, you know, getting some of the guys they've gotten in, even with, you know, non-first or non like high lottery picks. So, you know, it might hurt to sell low or what may be perceived as selling low on Cam Reddish, but if like a guy like Jalen Johnson blossoms in the next couple of years, that could help soften the blow a bit. So I'm still optimistic about the Hawks' long-term future. And I think, you know, again, the flexibility that they have gives them really, I mean, they can put together like whatever package you want if a star becomes available. Like if they are really are interested in Ben Simmons, if the Sixers wanted cap relief, include Gallo in the deal. If they wanted, you know, a power forward, you can have John Collins in the deal. You can include, you know, for Boston, that was the one that I think makes a lot of sense for both sides. It sounds like the Celtics really don't want to break up the Tatum Brown combination, but I know if they do, they're going to keep Tatum, trade Brown. And I thought, you know, Atlanta could put together a really appealing package for Jaylen Brown with Gallo as the cap relief or salary filler, Okongwu if they want to move him, Hunter, you know, you can, like, if the Hawks do get in on this Ben Simmons, Tobias mega deal, they could include Capella and send him to a third team. So that they have a lot of possibilities. It's just turning those into something material in the next month.
Most definitely. And I would look at Gordie Jing too.
Yeah.
$4 million contract, 1 year deal, the line of rights on an expiring deal. So you have to ask yourself, if you're Travis Schlink and Tony Wrestler upstairs, hey, do we cash in these expiry contracts for something with more team control to give us some stability going forward? Or do we let them expire and use the draft picks and use some trades? Because, I mean, these guys only on, like I said, you got to cash them in right now because Lou is expiring deal, DeLonte Wright's expiring deal, Jing's expiring deal, and Gallo's contract. So You got four contracts you can play with to get some of substance coming back that can last us for a long time. So you decide which one of those numbers you want to play with. I'm gonna try to play with Gallo and Lou Williams first and save Wright and Jing if I had to go there to turn them into something. That's what I would do personally.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And I'm writing something about this at Forbes right now, but I think because of the play-in tournament, there are just a lot more teams that are going to be buyers and sellers at the trade deadline. Like they're, you know, at the East especially, Detroit, Orlando are really the only two teams like completely out of the race already. Indiana's hovering around there too. But, you know, you got 12 teams in here who came into the season and Indiana wanted to make the playoffs. Things just didn't go right. But you have 12 teams right now that have realistic aspirations for at least making the play-in tournament. So if the Hawks were to be willing to take a step back and start selling off more pieces, you know, some of the expirings or even some of their, you know, a bigger trade, they might have more teams willing to buy and willing to pay a decent price for them, since contenders just aren't going to have a ton of options available to them. So I think there's an opportunity there if they are, you know, willing to take a bit of a step back and then recalibrate and hope to go in hard next year. But at the same time, I could also see them saying, like, we're not willing to take a step back after the year we had last year. Like, we want to continue building and building, and, you know, we're happy, or we're not happy with where we are currently, but like, we believe in the foundation of this group and we just need to tinker with some of the pieces.
I will say Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter were defenders on our team, and Capella, the defends, like, they actually competed at the end of the floor. Like, there has to be something said about, I know we talk about defense a lot, we're here in Atlanta with Nate, and Milo talks about it a lot, so it's Travis Link, but the roster's not filled with defenders.
Yeah.
So what do you expect to happen when you don't have a roster filled with defenders? You know,
that's just
my looking at it, just being objectively as I can. Not as a Hawks fan, but subjectively, look, the guys on the roster aren't defenders. They're just, they're scorers who can defend on a team concept, not gonna lock anybody down. They can be disciplined with the game plan, but they can't just stop somebody.
Right. And I think you're always gonna be limited to some extent if you're a team built around Trae Young. Like, you're never gonna have a top five defense if Trae Young is, you know, your point of attack defender, just because as great as he is offensively, he's always, you know, like, he tops out at an average defender probably. And I don't think he's even at that level right now. So you have to make up for it in other areas. And Capella last year was that good, that he did help erase a lot of the mistakes that Trae made. But, you know, I think you're totally right. Like, the personnel are just, you're building the team that just needs to score 130 every night. Like, you just need to outscore teams and know you're going to have a below average defense. You know, right now I think they're tied for 27th in the NBA in defensive rating. So hopefully you could at least get into that like 15 to 20 range instead of 27th. But I struggle to see how they're going to go, you know, into like the top 10 or even top five, barring some major personnel changes.
Yes. And like, you watched it in playoff last year with the Knicks. Trae Young hit on Reggie Bullock the whole time in the corner, whether it be strong side or weak side three. Thibodeau never put Bullock in the action. Mm-hmm. It's always a Julius Randle middle isolation in the middle of the floor, or Derrick Rose isolation and drive. Never, I'll let Trae Young hide on Bullock. The Sixer series, he hid on Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, yes, it is.
And with the Bucks series, when he did play those few games where his ankle got twisted, Tucker, like, he's hiding on the worst offensive player. The Hawks Demons are worst offensive player. Mm-hmm. But yet, if you put him in the action, we're toast.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, when I saw Budenholzer and Doc Rivers and Thibodeau, I'm like, y'all, the key to beating the Atlanta Hawks is putting Trae Young in action.
Right.
Yeah, not like, that I want to give away the sauce, but that's the truth.
Right. What's the first thing on the scouting report? Is Trae Young is a terrible defender. Try to run him in pick and roll. And I think, you know, the Knicks, to some extent, didn't have the right personnel. Like, Derrick Rose is the one exception, but like, they trotted out Elfrid Payton as their starting point guard for most of that series, as like the ceremonial starting point guard before switching to Rose. And then the Sixers, just because of Ben Simmons' limitations, they aren't a very pick and roll heavy team. They have like Seth Curry as their best option. And now this year, Tyrese Maxey has developed into that. So I think if you run this series back with this version of Tyrese Maxey, it's probably a different story, but they didn't have much faith in Maxey last year. He was a rookie. He barely played. You know, he had I think it was the game 6 that he came and like saved them. They were just like totally flatlining. And then it was like, oh my gosh, they have a guard who can run pick and roll. This is incredible. But yeah, I mean, I think the Hawks benefited from some, whether it's like faulty rosters or, you know, bad coaching decisions, they definitely benefited from Trae Young being able to hide.
I'm gonna call it stubborn coaching decisions.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Stubborn, because they never change.
Yeah.
Like Doc Rivers and Thibodeau and Budenholzer. And Jingles in Memphis, too, is what we run.
Right.
We don't change. Like, that's where I feel like Memphis, not to change the topic, but Memphis is with Taylor Jenkins as a head coach. He came from the Budenholzer tree, who's in Atlanta. So I've watched his system. I know what it is. It does not change ever.
Right.
We're gonna, I do it better at the play, more pace. That's what I can do Bud's press conferences in my head. I can just do it. But I know he's going to say every time. It's like it never changes. And not to down Bud or Jenkins, some of the same play calls they run, the same thing they ran in Atlanta.
Yeah.
The same calls. Not even different calls, Brian. They're the same freaking calls. They're with the Hawks. I do that play.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, Doc River, you're totally right. I could hear like after every single Sixers loss, it's the balls got stuck. We didn't move the ball around. We didn't play with pace. Like it's the same story every time. So, it's a credit to the coaches, like a Nick Nurse in Toronto, who is, you know, just throws stuff against the wall. And even Steve Nash, I think, deserves more credit for that than he typically gets in Brooklyn this year. Like he's willing to treat the regular season as an experiment. Because when you have a team that's that good, that you like, obviously we have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, you're gonna make the playoffs. So like, why not just throw out ridiculous lineups or ridiculous rotations and just see which combinations of guys do and don't work well? And I think honestly that could apply to the Hawks as well. Like you go into the season and depth is supposed to be one of your biggest assets because you have 10, 11, 12 guys, all of whom are deserving of minutes, deserving of at some touches. And then like, let's try out different combinations instead of keep trotting out the same groups that we consistently see aren't working well together.
And why is Timothy Lalo-Cabarro starting?
Very fair question.
That's a question that Nate has not answered yet.
Oh,
maybe
really?
they don't want to ask him, but yeah. I'm like, why is Timothy Lalo-Cabarro starting? He was non-guaranteed for a reason.
Right.
He should not be our starting three.
Yeah, you would think Cam Reddish would have been that player for, well,
that was part of his discontent.
Yeah.
He's behind Timothy Lalo-Cabarro.
Yeah.
TLC's a nice guy.
Yeah.
I think he should be on the bench, never playing, but you're a nice guy, TLC. Right.
Yeah, like great 13th man.
So, yeah, some of the rotations that of Nate's are left something to be desired. And, I just don't know, Brian. I want to say the Hawks to be a play-in team, but I know what I know. And I see what I see. And I'm like, this is what we were last year.
Right.
We got hot at the right time. And things went our way. It wasn't like we was just world beaters.
Right. And it goes back to like how if the Hawks were in the West, I'd feel great about their play-in chances because there's like only really 7 or 8 decent teams in the West this year. Like this is just a complete inverse of what we've seen over the past decade. The West has just so consistently been better than the East. But, you know, now like, with Dame being shut down in Portland, and now there's talk of like Paul George might be shut down for the year, Kawhi might be shut down for the year, the Clippers could go into free fall. So like you almost are going to stumble into the play-in tournament in the West if you're a half decent team. But you know, look at the standings right now, and it's Charlotte, Toronto, Washington, Boston are 7 through 10, and then the Knicks are tied with Boston and the Hawks are 3 games back. So you know, injuries might cause one or two of those teams to fall out, but I struggle to see any of those teams selling at the trade deadline. Like, I don't think the Raptors, seeing how good they've been lately, I don't think they're going to, you know, try to send Pascal Siakam for a couple of first-round picks and nothing else. Like, the Hornets are trying to build. The Cavs have been one of the best surprises of the season so far. So, again, it raises the question, like, how much does Atlanta prioritize a play-in spot over if they can get some real assets back for some of the guys who they don't view as long-term pieces? I'm not saying they should trade like John Collins for a first round pick just because, but you know, if they don't want to pay certain guys for the next few years, or if they think certain guys are going to fall out of the rotation or not get as many touches as they want and get annoyed about that, then it's time to consider, okay, how can we shake this thing up?
How about Jabrian? I was shocked that they paid Herter.
Yeah.
For the deadline of extensions. I thought they'll let that ride and let him prove it again on a manageable deal, not to tie up the books for 4 years. Now, the thing about his contract is it's very tradable.
Yeah.
It's very tradable, but I'm shocked they did that and handcuffed themselves temporarily with those numbers on the books.
Yeah.
Knowing that you still have to pay DeAndre Hunter since you made that decision to pay him. Now, the key with Hunter is what's the injury history? What's the number going to be?
Right. And I mean, with Herter too, it's like, and there aren't that many teams with a ton of cap space this upcoming offseason. So they could have just let this thing go, but you know, free agency is just such an interesting complication for GMs. Cause it's like, it only takes one team to overpay this guy. And then you either have to match a contract you could have possibly gotten a discount on before, or you just have to let him go. So I think that's part of the equation, is like, what was the price point you're comfortable paying Kevin Herter moving forward? And what do you envision him as on this team moving forward? Like, do you see him as the long-term Bogdanovich replacement? And if so, should you trade Bogdanovich? Or are you just re-signing him to keep him as a potential asset down the road? And I think you're right. Like, he's not on an unreasonable contract. I think he'll have very positive trade value if they decide to go that route, but it does limit their flexibility this year in particular.
Yeah, I was shocked about that. But yeah, I'm thinking Hunter may be one of those 4 years, $80 million, if that.
Yeah.
I would more so put him at 4 years and 64 or 70 max, just because of his injury history.
Yeah, I'm trying. What, Jonathan Isaac got like 3 years, $50 million, I want to say, right?
Yes.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like if you can get him, you know, push that up to 4 years and get him in the 65 to 70 million range, that would be an incredible value. And you know, you can use the injuries as like, this is why we're not paying you 25 million per year. But you know, it wouldn't shock me if he wants to bet on himself and say like, no, I think I'm worth at least 4 years, 90 million, do what John Collins did last year and say like, you know, I think I can earn myself more money. I'm going to pass on the extension.
Yeah, because it's gonna be interesting to see how the Hawks play these numbers, because the Hawks not be a luxury tax team being in the play-in game every year.
right.
Because I know Mr. Russell, like, we're keeping Trey Young, but we are be sell off some of this money.
Because
I just don't see it. I wouldn't pay it. You know, I wouldn't. Like, I was shocked the Hawks signed John Collins. At the number they signed him, because this is my thing about the Browns is, I love JC as a person, but he does not make us better or worse than what we are right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it play out that way, and I
said that people was like, "Oh, you've been a hater." No, I love the guy. I'm looking at just pure business wise. He does not make us better or worse than losing him.
Yeah, I mean, I was floored when they re-signed him, honestly, and I think, you know, the playoff run obviously influenced that decision. And again, maybe it's similar to Herter, where they see, all right, we can re-sign him, but we could also trade him down the line and he's going to have positive trade value. But yeah, I mean, all of these stories have been coming out this week about him being like disgruntled with his role and not getting enough touches, or like
that's been going on. That's old news.
I like, didn't we have this exact same story at this time last year? I feel like Chris Kirschner of The Athletic had, like, you could copy and paste it from a year ago.
Oh yeah, that's what he does. I have stories about him for days. But yes, yes. JC's been upset with his role. He's been upset with not the defense. This is like old news, like you say. Like, this is like, you know, yes. That's why they thought he wouldn't come back, because him and Trey Young butt heads about the direction of the team.
Yeah.
Young does not defend. He wants to defend, you know. Like, it's out. Brian, did you see the video of Trey Young in Portland? The fan called him out of his name?
I don't think so.
Watch the video of Trey Young getting called out of his name. And nobody stepped back to stop him.
Oh, interesting.
That's telling y'all, you know, about how they feel about something behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Nobody defended him from being called out of his name.
Hmm.
They called him the world around the rounds with the witch. Okay.
Interesting. In Portland. Interesting.
Watched the video, the guys walked on past. He's getting called that word. Say it to my face. Say it to my face. Nobody's corralling him or saying he ain't this.
Oh boy.
So that's a snapshot of how they're disconnected. Yeah. Listen to John Collins last night in post game. They're not together. They need to be. Who does that start with?
Right. I mean, I remember the story last year specifically said, like, he confronted Trae Young. I think it was during a film session or something. Yes. And then, you know, he spoke with Chris Kirshner this week and, like, alluded to some tension there, but didn't specifically name Trae Young, like, call him out publicly, which I honestly respect John Collins' approach to this. Like, that story, you know, Shams Charania breaks the story Monday that he's disgruntled, and he speaks, goes on the record with Chris Kirshner on Tuesday. He's like, yeah, man, I'm frustrated because we're losing and because I don't think I'm being used correctly. But, like, good on him for owning up to it instead of just, you know,
being source. Bush.
Yeah, like, being like, oh, no, I didn't say anything like that. Like, what Damian Lillard's been doing all season. Like, oh, I didn't leak all this stuff about me wanting to be traded. Like, okay. Yeah.
Dude, your man Chris Haynes.
Right.
If it's Chris Haynes, it's you, brother.
Yeah, right? Like, you might as well get the ghostwriter or, like, the byline tag on there. Come on, man. Like, of course this comes for you. So I thought it was good that that Collins owned up to it at least. And I got to ask you, because, you know, I'm coming from the Philly side of things, and obviously Ben Simmons has been connected to the Hawks in recent days. Like, what do you make of all of that? And would you, you know, as a Hawks guy, would you have interest in actually having him on the team, you know, depending on the price they had to pay to get him?
No, because of the spacing factor for me offensively. If you have Clint Capella and Ben Simmons, he loses the floor spacing.
Yeah.
You know, you can put Simmons in the weak side corner, maybe. You know, but what is he going to do? Dives, run dives with him, picking rolls. Is he going to be a roll guy? Capella out there? So, like, defensively, great idea. Trying to score the ball offensively, I don't like the fit.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get rid of JC, wants more balls in the post, but can't get them for a guy who defensively he's great, but he needs the ball in the offense to be effective.
Right.
And that means that's balls for Trae Young in his hands. So you're Robert Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah.
This does not make any sense basketball wise. Now, if you want to try to sell tickets and jerseys, it makes sense to a degree. But for if you're talking about pure basketball, if I'm the Atlanta Hawks, Travis Link, Tony Ressler, and Landry Fields, I don't do that.
Yeah.
I use the contracts we mentioned earlier in this segment to find pieces that fit what we need to do defensively, being 3-and-D guy, like a guy like Robert Covington with the Sixers, who I went to school with, Tennessee State. I went to school with the guy.
Oh, cool.
Bring him in as a 3-and-D guy. If you think he fits, sign him. You know, I would maybe play with expirings or guys who are young and can be resigned at decent numbers to help defensively around, off the bench. If you're going to keep Hunter, it's going to be Young, Hunter, Herter, Bogdanović, with Capella and Collins. So I'll come off the bench right now. So if I'm looking at the rotation going forward, I got to look for guys who will fit the 22-23 Hawks. That's what's right. The 21-22. But using those contracts that I can to acquire talent that works for this team and its makeup, being Trae Young, being the point man.
Yeah. I get it. I think exactly what you said. Like, defensively, it makes sense. But offensively, it's hard to imagine Simmons and Capella working. And it makes me wonder if Capella would be going out in a separate deal. Like, could they somehow get Ben Simmons and Miles Turner together? Like, Miles Turner is one of the few bigs that I think could actually work really well with Ben Simmons. And, you know, Indiana has been connected to him, to Simmons as well. So, like, I think Atlanta might be one of the teams I'm most fascinated by ahead of the trade deadline, just because they have so many directions that they can go in. Like, I am just dying to know what's next, especially after what just dropped today.
If you play him at the five,
It hasn't worked well for Philly. I'll say that much. Like, it offensively it can, but defensively, like, I know people want to, like, make him into Draymond Green or Giannis or something. he just does not have that same kind of a mindset. Like, those dudes are killers, and Ben Simmons is just, he's not that.
Yeah, so if you're the only way you're making him the five in Atlanta, would I say maybe it can work? Because yeah. You can't clog it up with him and Capella out there in your starting five.
Right.
And then who's going to play in the play? Then who's on close?
Yeah,
right. You can't close with Capella and Simmons out there in the fourth quarter. You're trying to come back and win games.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm looking at it from first to the end of the game. Like, for me, I look at who closes the games, too. A lot of fans don't look at – I look at who closes, too. So who are you going to close with? If the roster is Simmons, Capella, Hunter, Herter, Bogdanović, whoever, and who am I going with? Who am I going to close this thing out? Who can I get a good shot for? If I got two guys who are not going to shoot three-pointers.
Right. Or any jump shots at all.
Yes. So, or and also who cannot shoot free throws.
Yeah, right.
Capella and Simmons have a problem with at the line.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, it's the Atlanta Hawks are at a crossroads right now. The next month will show us where the Hawks are going forward at, and your article kind of jumps out for me what I already thought anyway.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, I mean, we brought it up on our podcast recently, and I was like, you know what? I think I want to write about this too, because I've been like, especially since the Sixers series, I've been following, you know, kind of the team building aspect of Atlanta. I just thought they had so many interesting decisions with Herter and Collins this past offseason. And like, the other thing is, I mean, the NBA is going to have new TV contracts in a couple of years. Like, there's a possibility that the salary cap just explodes in 2025. So part of me is thinking, like, maybe the Hawks just don't care. They're willing to pay the luxury tax for a couple of years, because like, by the time that new TV deal kicks in, if you have all these young guys on contracts they signed beforehand, these could all be value contracts by the middle of the decade. So I continue to be fascinated by how they approach their roster building, like both short and long term.
Yes, it's going to be interesting to see, Brian. Hey, man, this was fun, brother. We'll do this again real soon. Like, I love this cap stuff. I love team building. I love roster construction. So what you wrote about is right in my wheelhouse, brother.
Awesome. Well, happy to come on anytime. Thank you for having me.
Good time. Be safe, my guy.
You too.
All right.